Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Sunday morning wake-up call. I'm Rick Moore. Thank you for being with us here today. Our guest, John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute. The Rutherford Institute, dedicated to the defense of civil liberties and human rights. You can find him at www.rutherford.org. John Whitehead, listen to this, is an attorney and author well-versed in the area of constitutional law and human rights. In 1982, Mr. Whitehead established the Rutherford Institute, a nonprofit civil liberties and human rights organization whose international headquarters located in Charlottesville. The author of numerous books, including his latest, Battlefield America, The War on the American People. Mr. Whitehead has also filed numerous briefs before the U.S. Supreme Court. He has been co-counsel in several landmark Supreme Court cases. After being the subject of national and international print, radio, and television interviews, he finally made it to the Sunday morning wake-up call. Check that off your bucket list. Good morning.
Thank you very much, sir. It's good to be here.
And thank you for taking the time for 60 minutes with John Whitehead. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
The first question, because people talk about defense of civil liberties. That also requires you, does it not, to fight for issues that you don't always... I mean, if you go past the civil liberties issue itself, but you have to represent arguments that you may not believe in.
Oh, sure. I mean, free speech is free speech. I mean, Martin Luther King, people like that, emphasize that. And, you know, that's why they were so effective, because free speech is for everybody. You don't have to agree with them. I've defended people over the years. I would say, I've said this before, some of the people I've defended, if I ate dinner with them, I get indigestion, because I don't agree with what they have to say. Their speech is hateful, and I don't agree with it. However, what I always say is, if that person on the street corner is saying some things you don't like, but they're doing it peacefully as the First Amendment requires, you'll have a right to do it. So it's like a virus. It spreads. And free speech is healthy. I mean, the people who wrote the Constitution understood that, and that's why we have it in the Constitution, because it creates debate. It makes people think. If you read some of the great dystopian authors like George Orwell, Aldous Huxley, in those books, the society they saw coming, they said that, you know, things like free speech and debate would go. Well, debate goes when you don't have free speech. We want to hear what people have to say.
Not everybody does.
Yeah. Again, yeah. I mean, if you want to debate, if you don't want to debate, you want to shut down free speech, then you can. But what's going to happen at that point in time is, when you decide, hey, I want to raise an issue of public concern, you go out and do it, and things have shifted, you're not going to be able to do it. And so that's why I emphasize is, let's keep it peaceful. That's what the First Amendment says. It says, you know, you have a right to peacefully assemble and petition the government for a redress of grievances. And the reason it was, again, I'll go by the reason it was in there is, just to give you a little bit of history, the original Constitution did not have a First Amendment or a Bill of Rights. And Thomas Jefferson contacted Madison by letter and said, what are you doing here? We need a Bill of Rights to protect us against the government. And Madison's response, like a lot of the founding fathers of that day, so-called founding fathers, they believed in natural law. They believed you had a right to free speech. It came not from the government, but from nature, or some believe God. It already existed. So Madison's response is, well, since it's already there, government can't do it anyway. But, Jefferson said, hey, government has a tendency, if you don't tell them, to violate the law. So let's tell them. So that's one reason you have the freedom of speech in the Constitution, because they knew it didn't come from government. Government does not grant the right to free speech. They don't have a right to deny it. It's already there. It's inherent in our, you know, our societies. And so that's really, really important concept. But it's not just for what you believe. It's because you're a human being, you have that right. And some, believe it or not, some geneticists now are arguing that things like free speech and people believing in constitutional rights may be part part of our genetics. If that's true, that's the reason it exists. So that would go back and essentially prove the nature argument that the so-called founding fathers are putting forth. So it's everybody's right. We're human beings.
People regularly say we have the right to free speech. You have mentioned several times now you never leave out the redress of grievances.
Yep.
How important is that part of it?
Oh, it's so important because we want to be able to talk to and alert the so-called government representatives. That's what's there, petition the government for a redress of grievances. We want to be able to tell the government, hey, we don't like what you're doing. You're shutting down this avenue. You're violating our rights. And they've done it routinely, even in this country over the years. I go back to the Civil Rights Movement, Martin Luther King. They were attacking him with dogs as he walked down the street and, you know, trying to stop him. And they didn't have that right to do it, but they were doing it through brute force. That's the problem. But again, it's so important because if we don't, and most Americans don't speak up today, we just kind of keep shut our mouths. We watch, the average American watches 151 hours of television a month. We're watching, we're not doing. And in my opinion, if we don't wake up and start kicking butt on this idea of free speech and getting out there and telling the government we don't like what you're doing, and then we're going to lose that right because we're just going to forget it. Listen, let me give you an example. I have students that I've taught in my summer intern program for 34 years, and I ask them each summer, basically, can you give me the five freedoms in the First Amendment? Most can't do it. They do not know what's in the First Amendment. I have students in my study, 22 students studying with this summer, who have taken constitutional law, and you realize they haven't studied free speech in their constitutional law seminar, and I'm going, what? When I was in law school, that was the premier thing we were taught, free speech. But we were coming out of that 60s era with Martin Luther King and all the radicals. You're not getting that today. So it's being dumbed down, and that bothers me.
Our guest today again, Sunday morning wake-up call, John Whitehead with us from the Rutherford Institute. We are talking about civil liberties, human rights, the police state. We'll be getting into that a little bit.
Now, let me give you a quote here. It's good. Just on the free speech before we go off of it. George Washington said, if the freedom of speech is taken away, then dumb and silent, we may be led like sheep to the slaughter. That's George Washington.
We're not going anywhere off of it for a little bit.
I want to make sure I got that one in because, see, you see what he's saying? You're going to be led sheep to the slaughter. And that's my job, is to get out there and make sure if the sheep want to go out there and tell the government, hey, I don't agree with you, whatever, I'm there to help them out.
You can go to the Rutherford.org website. You have weekly articles every Monday, correct?
Weekly commentaries, yeah. They're on all the big websites.
They're quite amazing to read. You're not shy. A lot of them are tied into pop culture. That may not be the best way to phrase it, but they're tied into, back in May, I think, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band celebrated its 50th anniversary. There was something tied into that. Name escapes me at the moment. Gentleman who did the filming of the zombie movies passed away.
George Romero.
George Romero, yep, passed away. You wrote an article about zombies just this past week. So they're tied into the themes about what
cultural,
the Rutherford Institute.
What's happening culturally, yeah.
Right. So
Rutherford.org. People can go read them, yeah.
Right. But let's talk about something that happened locally and that has come up and made a national issue. The July 8th march of the Klan march here in Charlottesville. I want to go back a little bit in the steps that led up to that. Your thoughts on moving the Robert E. Lee statue in general?
Well, to be honest with you, and again, I've offered my counseling the city with other people. I know we wrote a letter about a week ago, the ACLU, National Lawyers Guild Legal Aid. We sent the city and said, hey, let's establish an independent council. Bring in the civil liberties groups, police, people in the community, you know. You, sir, you'll be a good one to send. And people are involved in the community, and let's do these things rationally. To be honest with you, if I'd done it, I don't agree with the Lee statute. What I would have done is I'd have put a, this is just my suggestion, folks, a statue of Martin Luther King on that park, on a rock, with some of his magnificent quotes. He was my hero. If you notice, I'm wearing a t-shirt today with his photo on it. And put a plaque on the Lee the statute and the Confederate thing and just explain what it was. It was not a great period. No, it was. It was slavery. It was bad. But you had people like this that counted it and turned it into an educational experience for children, for the community. If you notice the Richmond mayor, I don't know if you notice what he's decided to do.
I have to notice that. He's African-American. Actually, he went to the school where my wife is an assistant principal.
Oh, okay.
And he has graduated and grown up and become the mayor of Richmond. And he's turned that street into, he's keeping all those statues, and he's turning it into an educational.
That's the way to move. Yeah, when I saw that, I went, wow, what a good move. And, yeah, because, again, I've defended right and left wing, and extreme right and extreme left. And what a lot of these people, especially, you know, get on the right, like in the left too sometimes, is they want press. So this has energized the KKK. There's no doubt about that. So I think a more thoughtful approach to this, we wouldn't even be here today. I mean, let's honor the people who have changed the country in a more positive way, such as King. And King did do that. I mean, amazing. He won the Nobel Peace Prize. He... he came out against the Vietnam War. He did all the things. He says, I'm for everybody, every color. And that upset a lot of people in the country at the time, African-Americans. They said, are you leaving the civil rights movement? He said, no. I think my job is to protect everybody. It isn't just people of color. It's people of everybody, you know? And so he set a really good precedent, in my opinion. And great quote. He said, we may have all arrived here on different boats, but we're all in the same boat now. And that's the key. We're all in that same boat. Do we want to sink together or do we want to float together? And, again, I would have turned it into an amazing educational experience. Yeah. And King is a good place to start. His writings are monumental. Yeah.
12 minutes after the hour, Sunday morning wake-up call, our guest John Whitehead. You can find his writings at Rutherford.org. He's from the Rutherford Institute, dedicated to the defense of civil liberties and human rights, and that's what we're talking about today. So as we talk about how we got to July 8th here in Charlottesville, Virginia, anticipation is such the wrong word to use, but as things were going along, the moving of the Robert E. Lee statue from what was then Lee Park, some of the alt-right folks, Jason Kessler, trying to eat dinner outside at a downtown mall restaurant, and folks who were against what he was representing at the time, going up to his table and getting right in his face and yelling at him to leave and move away and stop what he was doing. Where does the Rutherford Institute and where does John Whitehead stand on that? Is that,
well, I can just tell you my personal opinion. Yeah, I wouldn't do that. No. I mean, I just wouldn't do that. I don't. The proper place to take that would be at a march or whatever you're doing. Go home. You don't like it, express your free speech. People can do that if they want. But again.
But is that a civil right? Is that what we're talking about? Is that a civil liberty? Is that a.
Well, if you paid for a dinner, it would seem you'd have a right to eat it. But as far as it has to be on public property, a march, I mean, that could be disorderly conduct. You can get several people were arrested for, you know, around those kind of events. But the thing that I try to teach people, and again, it goes back to King and the other great thinkers, is that we're all human beings. Let's treat people with dignity, no matter who they are. I mean, we all came on different boats, but we're in the same boat now. If you, the golden rule, if you don't want it done to you, then don't do it to other people. If you want to be able to eat your dinner in a restaurant, don't go up and try to wreck somebody else's dinner. Wait till the proper time when they're out there marching or flapping their lips or whatever they may be doing at the particular point in time. But being discourteous, being nasty to people doesn't work, and it also gives sort of a bad image of Charlottesville, in my opinion, when people read about that. I've had actually had journalists. I mean, I interviewed with the Washington Post and two or three other major newspapers on different issues recently, and some of the journalists have asked me, is Charlottesville the center of the new alt-right? And I went, no, it's not. It may appear like that. I mean, the San Francisco Chronicle running an article on what's going on here. And I'm seeing, you know, me quoted, and I'm going, whoa, this thing's gone national. But, you know, treat people with dignity. We're human beings. Why don't you start on that path of treating people less than they may not be so dignified, but let's treat them that way, because that way we want to be treated. And that way you keep us up there on that high plane where we want to be. We're rational thinking human beings, not all of us. But even though we disagree, let's debate it at the point where it's time to debate it.
So where do First Amendment rights start and stop? If you have one person who is representing a line of belief and commentary that you may not agree with, who's eating outside, where do your First Amendment rights stop and start?
On public property. On private property, no. There's no First Amendment right on private property. No. On public property, especially what they call traditional public forums, like public parks, yes, you have absolute freedom out there.
But the downtown mall is tricky, because you have all you have to separate public property and private property is.
But you can't harass somebody on private property eating dinner and think that's a constitutional right. No, if Kessler's out on a public sidewalk talking to somebody, sure, you can walk up and debate him, and he can walk away.
I don't think debate was taking place, though, right? Somebody was standing up next to him and yelling.
What I saw was a lot of finger-pointing and stuff like that and yelling, And again, you know, if you don't want to be treated that way, don't. But if someone's out there, you know, shooting their mouth off, which they have a right to do under the First Amendment, peacefully assembling, you have a right to debate them. But on private property, I mean, the Constitution doesn't apply. That private property is governed by other rules, other statutes and laws, and you can get arrested for interfering with somebody's rights on their on private property. So I'd just be careful in that sense.
So then we have the actual march takes place. And then it seems like we have two issues that the Rutherford Institute stands for clash. And tell me when I misrepresent this, because I can see by your face that we start with you have the issue of free speech, and by free speech here I'm talking about the people who are representing the Klan come through and they're making free speech by with their march.
Yes, expression, freedom of expression.
Freedom of expression. But then in the attempt at helping them with their freedom of expression, the state crosses the line, I think many people would say, by hurting with human rights, by hurting those who are that's where the tear gas goes off, correct?
Yeah, I don't think the KKK was involved in the tear gas. That was other people.
But the government, in helping them by allowing them to represent their freedom of expression, and so suddenly the effort at representing freedom of expression, suddenly now we have a law, we have civil liberties are damaged, hurt.
I don't know exactly what you're saying, but are you saying because the government allows someone to have free speech, they're hurting someone
else?
Well,
I think that
they have to do that under the Constitution. If it's a public space, a traditional public forum, and they have a permit issued by the city of Charlottesville, they definitely have a right to be out there. So the question is, whose rights are you hurting? I would say that debate's healthy. Free speech marches are healthy. It gets people out there, they're thinking, they're debating, and I like all that. I don't see where anybody's being hurt. You can get hurt with tear gas, and there's a lot of questions on whether or not that tear gas should have been used. I haven't seen all the facts on that. But, you know, we can talk more about the militarized police and how that affects things. I've done, you know, I've written two books specifically on it. But, no, the government, because it's a traditional public forum, has to allow them to be there. Yeah. Not allow, they have a right to be there.
Right.
And if someone else is imperiling their rights, such as other groups that don't like the KKK, etc., the government has a duty to protect them. However, in the tear gas situation, the KKK had already left.
Understood. And so that's where I'm questioning, do you think that, I mean, didn't that go too far? Now they went
from... Oh, the tear gas?
Yes.
Well, what I saw and what people who were there told me, yes. As I show in one of my commentaries that I actually wrote on the subject matter, there are other police departments that have had similar situations. They totally defuse those. Maybe later when we get into more in depth, we can talk about what the studies show in terms of the militarized police. But the studies reflect the idea that the presence of the militarized police ups the angst, anger, and sometimes helps foment the problems.
Yeah, let's do that. I definitely want to get into that. Time for our first break. Our guest, John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute. We'll be right back. So we're back with John Whitehead. John, we were talking about the militarized government. And you've written several, in fact, a lot of your articles on the Rutherford.org site that you write about have to do with a police state, with force. Talk for a minute, if you will, about that. There was some studies that I saw about, I don't know if diffusing is the right word.
De-escalating.
But there's a phrase you use about the if you put them out as a hammer, then everything's a nail, yeah, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Yeah,
right.
Well, you know, again, I've written a couple books that go into depth. One is A Government of Wolves, and the second is my most recent book, Battlefield America. When I was writing those books, I started reading some in-depth studies that have been done on the type of uniforms police wear today, the shields, the all the weaponry, which, by the way, come from the Department of Homeland Security. Generally, a lot of it's handed out free to local police. What the studies show that is that with the way the police dress away and the way they're trained often, it does lead to escalation of angst among citizens, and they get sometimes out of control, especially if you're moving towards someone with a shield or a gun. And one thing you did mention, which I have written about, and sometimes at different marches, for example, the St. Louis police in 2011 during the Occupy Wall Street, I mean, there was a huge park there where all these people were crowded in. The police showed up in brown uniforms, which is a different, the black uniforms are uniforms of authority and scare a lot of people. It presents angst, psychological angst, according to studies. Their guns were strapped down, and they shook hands with people before the march. There had been a lot of violence in Washington, D.C., Oakland, around in Berkeley. And they told the people that when the march ended, they had up to 36 hours, maybe 72 hours, to leave the park they were in. Then they announced that if you stay in the park, we want to know who wants to be voluntarily arrested. By the time they moved in afterwards, the police showed up again. There was like 20 people standing there going, okay, I think I'll be arrested. And they were peacefully taken away, and everybody went home. These were thousands of people. If I think we'd have moved in that direction here in Charlottesville, you probably wouldn't have seen. I mean, when that KK ended, I mean, I think what I'd have done if I'd have been the police, I would have announced that in 5 hours, folks, this is over. And again, people are going to go home and eat dinner and stuff like that. And it would have been, to me, they'd have been dispersed because there was no reason to be there except the police. They were angry at the police. And that was the thing that I saw. It shifted from, and I think you said it, from the KKK to anger at the police. And like I said, in situations where the police have been trained in de-escalation tactics, you don't see any of this stuff. You don't see any of the anger. People like them, and they go home. But this is one suggestion I gave the police before the march. I said, before this march, what I would do is I would have the police chief or assistant police chief get up and, you know, give a speech at the microphone and say, folks, we're here to prove that free speech works in Charlottesville. We don't want violence. And I said, quote Martin Luther King. I even offered to write the speech for him. I said, here, do it like that. And my idea here basically was some other police chiefs have done that. I work with police chiefs around the country. I mean, I get consulted on. They've done this before marches. They get up and give a peaceful speech and say, we're not here. We're not going to escalate this thing. And things run a lot smoother. There was, again, in St. Louis during that Ferguson riots. You remember that a couple of years ago?
Yes.
An African-American policeman went out there, and I saw him. He went on shaking hands everybody down the line, saying, good to have you out here. And all that anger backed off. So there are ways to do it. You can put the armed guys that look like the SWAT team type fellows back in, you know, back behind there, but not out front. Because, again, the thing, however, with this next march, though, and I've noticed they're predicting maybe 4,000 people in that park. I mean, this is
not a big park.
No, it was maybe 1,000 last time. So they're going to have to do something to de-escalate here. I'm afraid this time. I mean, all it takes is one person or a group that gets some policeman excited, some police officer excited or whatever, or think he's threatened, and bang. We don't want that. So there are, and again, I talk with a policeman that work in the academies. They say that most police today are trained in what they call the worst case scenario. In other words, they're expecting the worst case to happen. And they, again, some have offered to do this de-escalation training, which virtually no police guys do hardly any of that.
Was it on your website? Was either I read an article or I saw a link about Salt Lake City, where they were had spent the last several years doing this training, and in the last 2 or 3 or 4 years, they had actually not had any killings.
No, it works
in the entire city.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, you don't think of Salt Lake City being a top 10 city, but it is a major urban city.
It works. The thing is, the most recent FBI statistics state that crime in America is at an all-time low. In 2013, it was the lowest murder rate in a century in this country. We don't often hear those things. So the question is, why all the angst? And again, it goes back to the training and what we're seeing in the police academies, those kind of things. That can be changed, and the police are going to have to want to do that. And again, I've offered my help here in Charlottesville. We wrote a letter to city council saying, hey, we're willing to sit down with you guys and talk. This is ACLU, me, National Lawyers Guild, Legal Aid. We sent them a detailed 6-page letter saying, let's de-escalate this next thing. When 4,000 people crammed in that little park, you don't know who's showing up, by the way. And Kessler's calling for outside people to come in. David Duke, the big he's telling people to come to Charlottesville. So they're energized. And what I noticed was the way they walked in and walked out, they were very peaceful and they left. They got what they wanted, partially, except that it shifted to against the police instead of them. This next one, I'm serious. The police better talk about how to de-escalate this situation and make it known. And here's the other thing. Supposedly, Kessler's bringing his own private security team. The question I have, and it should be made public,
gracious,
is this. Are they carrying weapons?
Right.
I haven't heard a thing. Would I want my take my kid down there if this alt-right has... people armed with weapons.
Right, and all they have to do is have a permit. That doesn't mean they have the sensibility to use it properly.
Please tell us if that's true or not true. Be transparent. I mean, transparency is the key. I want to know, because like some of my students went down to the last march, and I would tell them, hey, listen, if people down there are carrying guns, probably do not stay back. Don't get too close, folks. Be warned about this thing. Don't be silly. Just take this thing serious. But I'm saying again, proper training by the police can de-escalate almost any situation. The studies show that, plus, as I show them about Battlefield America, the psychological studies document the fact that the militarized gear. Listen, how many people know this? When I say this to well-known journalists, they look at me and go, you're not serious. How many people know there are over 80,000 SWAT team raids occurring in America annually and increasing? 80% of those SWAT team raids are from mere warrant service, where a policeman used to not come to your door and knock on the door to see if you were the person. They're going through the door. They shoot up to 500 dogs a day sometimes. In these SWAT team raids, people, kids getting killed, burned from the flashbang grenades in America. What in the world is going on? And that's why we offered the city council in our meeting to meet and sit down. There should be oversight on those kind of things. Really careful oversight. Because what I saw from the July 8th thing, march or whatever you want to call it, protest, was things I mean, New York, Chicago, cities like that, San Francisco, I see the, you know, the police on the street. If you go to New York and Manhattan now, the police are standing there with AK-47s. Are we headed that way in Charlottesville? I mean, we don't want that, is what I'm saying. Now's the time to de-escalate.
What did our mayor say? It was, he said, an unfortunate incident.
Rather unfortunate, but I'm saying, I think if the police at the end of that march just said, listen, you have 5 hours to clear the park, folks, go home, eat dinner, just make the announcement, you know, we're going to be retreating soon. You know, we're not here to, you know, harass anybody. Go home.
It was rather unfortunate that we threw tear gas out at everybody.
It made national news, yes.
John Whitehead, our guest today on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Mr. Whitehead, the founder of the Rutherford Institute. You can find his writings at rutherford.org, 32 minutes after the hour. Mr. Whitehead, this is WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
So is the current White House administration better or worse or any different than the previous White House administration?
Just to give you my personal opinion, it's just my personal opinion.
That's all we're asking.
I don't think we're being represented very well. If people go to our website at rutherford.org and they read this week, because it just came out, I just wrote an article and it's been posted. It's gone up on some of the big websites. It's on Jeff Sessions' view of asset forfeiture, if people know what that is. That's where the police are taking billions of dollars each year from people who are traveling in cars that have cash. Sometimes they're money for their homes, and you have to go to court to get it back. And they take it even though you're not been convicted of a crime. You're just arrested for speeding. And they've taken more from people than burglars. It's divided up with the Justice Department. Obama was actually headed toward cutting it back. He's now going to accelerate that. So, I mean, it's stuff like that.
President
that
really Trump and Jeff Sessions, you mean?
Yeah.
Are going to accelerate
that. Yeah. They're for it. And what I'm saying, I mean, a woman's son is bringing money to his mom to buy a home. Nothing wrong. He gets pulled over. Then they ask what's in the back seat, and he tells them the police take the money for the home. They have to file a lawsuit to get it back. Most people can't afford that. They can't afford the attorney. They give up. They lose their cars, their homes, cash, and they've done nothing wrong. I mean, people go read. It's all out there. And no, I don't like the present way we're headed. In fact, my view of Trump is that the world is kind of viewing us as a little off base. Let's put it that way. That's being kind.
Do you think that that some of the current problems in the national, the United States as a nation, are they more executive, legislative, judicial? Are they in the White House, Congress, in the courts?
That's a big question, a good question. I think that a lot of our problems, and I've written on this too as well in my books and my commentaries, which people can read, is that the influence in Washington is mainly money. The average...
Everything comes from greed. I'm convinced of
20,
that.
20 some lobbyists per congressman. I was not surprised, because I've worked in and out. I've sued out in and out of Washington a lot, politicians. But the average congressman spends about 30 hours a week raising money now. They go to a phone bank for their next campaign. Whoa, wait a minute, though. They get nice salaries, benefits, golfing trips. They're spending 30 hours a week sometimes raising money for the next campaign. Oh, boy.
That leaves a lot of time to get work done.
If you and I did that... No. What I'm saying is that what I'm seeing, laws around the country are being passed by groups, private groups, that then hand them to your congressman who doesn't pass the laws. I mean, we're representing people who are getting threatened with arrest because they have one chicken in their backyard to get eggs is against the law. A veteran growing a tomato garden on a side yard. Okay, a janitor, listen to this, a janitor in Texas, his grass was 1 inch too long. He spent 18 days in jail. We helped a pastor, and this is a law written by this group, American Legislative Exchange Council, that lobbies the Hill for these things. He had more than, I think, 12 people in his home. He could only have 10 in meetings, unless it was like a Tupperware party. Eight policemen came into the home. He was arrested and actually taken to jail for a while, and they put one of those ankle bracelets on that sends out electronic signals.
Right.
This is just, then there's the other, give you one more. This just tells you who's running it. This is another law passed for this group. A woman in Phoenix, Arizona was passing out bottles of water on a sidewalk to people going into a rock concert. She was an evangelist. She was saying, "Jesus loves you," and hands them the water. The police arrested, confiscated the bottle of water, I mean, her case of water, and said it was illegal to pass out bottled water on a public sidewalk. I wrote the city council of Phoenix, Arizona. I said, "I'm going to give you 10 days to change that law. That's freedom of speech, or we're going to sue you." They altered the law immediately. And so she was back on the street 2 weeks later, handing out her water. But so what I'm saying is, my experience in Washington, D.C., and again, I've worked in and out of D.C. for years, is that it's run primarily money. You want to know who the problems are? It's the money people. Look at who serves in government under Trump. I mean, when they walk, their pockets jingle if they have cash.
I didn't know big cash bills jingled.
Well, they might like that coin sometime. But, yeah, from what my study of Washington, D.C., and again, suing there, working out of there, it's something, you know, people won't reform. And what I'm telling people, you can reform government, especially at the local level. Yes, you can do that. Washington, D.C., very, very difficult. I mean, how many of your listeners actually ever contact their congressman and say, "I'm not putting up with this anymore"? Asset forfeiture? You're driving down the road and they take all your cash. In some states now, they have the police have a device. They swipe your credit card when they pull you over and take and freeze all your cash, and it's theirs. On your credit card. You can't. Should that be allowed in America?
But you mean like those little white things, you know, you pay your small, the guy who cuts your grass, or the woman who cuts my hair has one that she puts on her, in her iPhone thing. The police officer has one of those things?
No. But what I'm saying is, and again, read my commentary on the asset forfeiture. It's called policing for profit. And, I mean, they found out that some of the money being used by local police are for clown carnivals, those kind of things. A clown called Sparkles in one place. That was actually what the money is going for. And this is people losing their homes and cars, and they can't get it back. Poor people. Listen, the Ruff Institute, when we take on cases, we do quite a few cases, we have lawyers do it pro bono. They don't charge the constitutional cases. But you go to your average lawyer for a case, you're going to have to ante up. And if you don't have the money, you can't go forward. It's expensive. That's why I started the Ruff Institute. I saw people who needed help, and I knew they couldn't afford the lawyer.
John Whitehead, our guest today, depressing me a little bit, from the Rutherford Institute, dedicated to the defense of civil liberties and human rights. You can find his writings at rutherford.org, as well as other major places around the internet. His book that you can find out now, Battlefield America, The War on the American People. We'll be right back. And back on the Sunday morning wake-up call with our guest, John Whitehead. Fascinating conversation. You can find us on cvillepodcast.org if you haven't heard the whole thing, or just want to go there and share it on the internet. Mr. Whitehead, so looking at some of the other questions I have today, I have a quote. I believe I found it on your site. James Madison, father of the Constitution, put it best when he warned, "Take alarm at the first experiment with liberties." So put that in context for some of the listeners today.
Well, we should have taken alarm a long time ago. We haven't, so it's gone far down the road. As I tell people, and again, I can demonstrate it factually and on our website and in my books. Again, my books, by the way, are heavily footnoted. We're in a police state at this point in time. The police state is usually a situation where everything that you're doing is being watched, listened to, and the slightest provocation can get you arrested or whatever, and that's happening. How many of your listeners know that the NSA now downloads about 2 million of our emails daily? And here's the key right now. They got caught. This just was revealed about a month ago. They're what they call traffic shipping now, our emails. They're sending them to Great Britain, where the Constitution doesn't apply the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment says in order to listen on our phone calls, etc., you have to have probable cause or some suspicion you're doing wrongdoing. Well, they now are evading that. This is, believe it or not, this is occurring under the Trump administration. They're sending our emails to Great Britain, where the Constitution doesn't apply, and they're being broken down and studied there. Again, everything. I mean, the FBI admits now that they can turn your phone on from a distance, becomes a microphone. Your laptop becomes a camera. They admit they can do that. Police here, local police here, have Stingray devices in their cars. They're handed out by the Department of Homeland Security to police departments. They go by your house. They act as fake cell phone towers. They draw all your information from your cell phone into the police car. All they need to be there is for a minute or so, and off they go. They got everything on your phone. Recently, by the way, the July 8th protests, some people were claiming that those helicopters flying overhead had dirt boxes in them. Those are provided by the FBI. They act as the same thing, fake cell phone towers. They draw all the information up from an area and monitor cell phones. And also, this is the scary thing, they can interfere with the signal. And the signal can go off, and they can block, you know, if you're trying to communicate with somebody. And some people were claiming that was happening, by the way, at that march, that there was interference here, and why they didn't understand what was going on. The FBI has been doing that now over major cities for years, dirt boxes. And I mean, so we're in a total surveillance state right now. You can say I'm a conspiracy theorist, but folks, do the research. Education precedes action. Education precedes awareness. So we're in, again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I footnote everything. This is Washington Post. This is Huffington Post. All the major publications and all that have documented this type of stuff. But the traffic shaping to me is the worst thing. Sending our emails to Great Britain, so you don't have to abide by the Fourth Amendment. What kind of government do we have? Now, should we be outraged by that? Take alarm at the first experiment with liberties? I'm screaming. We need a few more folks to scream. Maybe they'll hear us.
Well, so I go to the Rutherford Facebook page.
Yep.
Right? And reading some of the police state government pieces, because, again, this is one of the topics that you regularly write about.
And the reason I write about this stuff is take alarm at the first experiment of liberty. She's right. I want people to be educated. So I put out information sometimes that the government authorities do not like at all. So, obviously.
But there are always the people who disagree.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I copy somebody who disagrees.
Like disagreeers, yeah.
America, where everyone is now a spoiled little victim with too much time on their hands and so much money in their pockets. America, where the victims protest about how terrible they have it day and night. Ooh, and protest entitles you to attack police and innocent citizens, working citizens. The protesting victims think they're entitled to destroy millions of dollars of property. The protesting victims shut down traffic and credit, complete chaos, but ooh, they're a victim. Get a life. Free speech is not about attacking police, citizens destroying property. Act like criminal garbage. Get treated like criminal garbage. I support police and law and order in our communities.
Yeah, I support police and law and order in our communities as well. I don't really disagree with much of what was said there. Yeah, you don't go around screaming at the police. Now, some people do, and you can do that, by the way. The courts have upheld a number of cases where people do that. I mean, there's one case where the so-called protesters got in a policeman's face and yelled, you effing pig and effing this, and the court said that was free speech. Do I think that's a wise thing to do? No. I think if we want the police to de-escalate, we need to de-escalate. Let's be civil. Again, go back to what Martin Luther King said. We may have arrived on different boats, but we're in the same boat now, folks. What does that mean? When he said, I look at that Ku Klux Klan man, and what do I say? I'm not going to be like you. This is what King said. I'm not going to hate you. I'm not going to want to kill you. I'm going to love you. And, you know, again, the John Lennon, the Beatle who became an activist, by the way, he said there's two things that government can't really handle, humor and nonviolence. Smile, move on. Speak your rights, folks. You know, if you come out there with anger, you might be met with anger. You know, if you want to do unto others, do unto others, you know. I understand a policeman who talked to me. I was good friends with Tim Longo, the former police chief. He was a wonderful man.
He was telling me he did a great job.
Yeah, he just taught our interns a week ago. And when I told him once, he was kind of shaking his head. I said, man, I wouldn't want your job. And he said, you're a smart man, Whitehead. I mean, come on. It's not an easy job. But what I'm saying is that, yeah, I'm not whining. What I'm saying is that, hey, it can be done a way. I don't want to see how you get this town, tear gas, people getting shot. I don't want that. No. So how do you do it? There are de-escalating tactics you can use that will possibly do it better than we did it last time.
How do we get those from the government to accept ideas like that, since the previous attempt didn't seem to work?
I'm not sure. Like I said, you can go to our website and read the letter we wrote, the National Lawyers Guild, ACLU, Legal Aid, and myself, Ruff Institute, to the city. We offer them our help. We have not, that's over a week and a half ago, we haven't got a single response yet. It's like we said nothing to them. They're not responding. So the only thing you can do is go down to the city council, speak to them. Citizens want to pick it out front. That's free speech, right? Say, hey, it's time to listen up. Let's work together as a community is what I'm saying. We don't seem to be working together now. There seems to be a class of people called the government that's moving on. They're not listening to us. But maybe we're not persistent enough. That's what I'm saying. And I'd like to see, you know, people out there with some picket signs if they don't listen. They got a right to do it on property, you know. Let's just protest some of the things. If they don't listen to us, then there's only one way they might listen. And what I'm saying also, as I said earlier, is that if you want control of your government, do it at the local level. The people in D.C. probably are not, you're not going to be able to get to them. They don't even hold town hall meetings anymore. But the local politicians, you can urge them. You can get an, you know, I saw some comments at the last city council meeting. I thought, yeah, that's the way to do it. Get down there and speak your mind. Line up and get your 3 minutes. And maybe next time we'll get 5 minutes if we really push hard.
10 minutes left with our guest today, John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute. John, there's two topics I want to make sure we get into. One is President Trump and Twitter. Another one is about sort of the pop culture and one of your writings things. So I want to do both. Let's talk about President Trump and Twitter to start with. What are your thoughts on President Trump blocking some of his Twitter users? Do you think that that's unconstitutional? Is that free speech?
Well, could be made a case on that. I mean, why he's doing it? I know why he's doing it. You remember, how did he get kind of where he was at? He did a reality TV show. I think he sees his presidency, and I've said this a number of times, even in interviews. He's conducting a reality TV show, and primarily to his followers.
I can't change the channel fast enough.
So, I mean, like I said, I said earlier to you is that I long for the days of JFK, who gave a speech, and it was a great speech. It was well written. JFK wouldn't have Twittered, yeah, but blocking other people's Twitters, attacking people because of what their faces look like and all that stuff is, you know, and he appeals to a large evangelical Christian support out there.
How is that possible?
Let me finish here. When I read the Jesus in the Bible, he says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Listen, blessed are the peacemakers, so you'll be called the sons of God. That's not... They're not following that model. There's this guy in the White House. I think he should be critiqued by his so-called followers. Don't be doing this to people. Treat people with dignity and worth. Treat policemen with dignity and worth. Treat each other with dignity and worth. The President of the United States should be setting an example. He's not setting, again, I don't think he's setting a very good example. Well,
he is setting an example.
But I think, again, a lot of this, he keeps doing it because of the response he gets. I think he likes to be on his face on TV. I think he likes to be seen. Another outrageous remark. Remarks that, listen, my dad was a tough man. He would have gotten really upset over this kind of stuff. He might, you know, if he'd have said that to my mother, something like Trump said to women, my dad might have knocked him down. But it's, we shouldn't, you know, again, the news out there, I mean, the more they cover it and they treat it like it's a reality show, the more he's going to go. And I'm not sure, to be honest with you, I've sued in and out of, you know, people at the White House, et cetera. Things are pretty carefully controlled out of the White House. I think that we can't be fooled that this is just being made up on the sly. I don't think a lot of it is. I think it's appealing to a certain base out there that he thinks will keep him in power. And that's just my opinion, folks.
We also have some of the alt Twitter accounts that have sprung up since January.
Yep.
And in April, there was a U.S. government order forcing Twitter to reveal the identity of an anonymous anti-Trump account, and that was withdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that, you know, I'm curious as to your thoughts about that in terms of free speech.
Yeah. You mean, I think it's free speech. Yeah, I don't think that, and whenever the government gets into any kind of regulation of speech or expression, it's a constitutional issue, yes. So any of it, yes.
So one of the last things I think we're going to get into today, you had an interesting article, a recent one, the George Romero piece where you wrote about the zombie survival guides. And how there was really more about that because the CDC and the Department of Defense had their survival guides.
Good question, yep.
But really, was there more to that in terms of it being a way to keep Americans in control?
Well, for at least about, let me go back and get to the correct time here. About 15 years ago, I've been preparing for some kind of catastrophe. There's a war call. I cite all this, and against all the sources are major publications, not conspiracy. There was a War Army College report in 2008 predicting there was going to be economic collapse pretty soon. They've been doing zombie drills, the Center for Disease Control, where zombies, so-called terrorists or extremists, are put down, shot, and those kind of things, spending a lot of money on that. The most dangerous thing I saw recently, and I did a commentary on it and a vodcast people can go watch, is the Pentagon's doing a training video now for all their top personnel. It's predicting that, and you should go watch the video. It's only The Intercept, I believe it was The Intercept, a really good publication, did a FOIA request and got a copy of it. It's predicting that by 2030, the major urban areas in the world, including the United States, are going to break down. They're going to have to institute martial law. And they use that phrase, and you've heard it before from somebody, drain the swamp.
Yeah.
That's the phrase used in the video. a top-notch Hollywood director. It's beautiful. It's like a sci-fi film. It's only 5 minutes long. He's remained anonymous. They say he. And to be honest with you, I'm looking at it. It looks like a Spielberg or somebody who's really well done. It may not be Spielberg, but it's predicting, if you watch it, it's pretty scary. They're going to bring in the troops and the militarized police and put down the so-called uprising. So there has been a movement inside the top government officials for years to, they're worried about breakdown. Economic breakdown looks like a real possibility, okay? Here's the other thing. Arming, all the militarized gear we're seeing local police have are coming from the Department of Homeland Security. They're arming police. They're working with them. The FBI is helping train police chiefs now. Local police forces in many places are not really local police forces. The scary thing that came out a couple of years ago was is that it was discovered that the Department of Homeland Security had contracted to buy from a group called the ATK Corporation 1.6 million hollow point bullets for use by their agents. If you know what hollow point bullets are, when they hit the body, they expand and blow you apart. They have a one point, they have two, there's 200, at least 200,000 federal agents now walking around with hollow point bullets. And maybe some local policemen, we don't know, that hasn't been revealed. Now, that's what I call paranoia. I'm a former infantry officer. We weren't allowed to use them. In many countries, they're illegal, hollow point bullets, because of what they do. John F. Kennedy, his back of his head went off. He was shot with a hollow point bullet. So this is all documented, folks. There's a certain paranoia about Americans who want to protest these days. So I say be forewarned, but if you really believe in it, do it nonviolently. As John Lennon says, use humor. And Martin Luther King says, don't hate people, show love.
How do you have humor after hearing a story like that?
Well, you may not have humor, but you can definitely show love. Shake people's hands. You may not agree with them. Shake their hands. You know what happens, too? I notice what. Listen. I've handled clients, won their cases. These are the so-called strange people that many people don't like. They come in and critique me. I didn't like the way you argued the case. I'm glad you won it. You know what I do? I laugh out loud and say, you are the funniest joke teller I've ever known. I laugh at them. You know what they do? They get up and look at me and walk out of my office. I mean, I put them off. I don't get angry with them. Why do I get angry with them? I want them to go home. Just like you want the troublemakers to go home with this protest coming up in August.
What's some of your favorite music?
Oh, gee, I like.
You did that Sergeant Pepper.
I like all the Beatles stuff, especially. They talk Preach Love. They like Martin Luther King. I like some of the new music. A group called Bright Eyes. If you heard of them, a lot of the new groups I like too.
I need something new to listen to, or I need something that I haven't listened to in a while. What should I put on in the car or at the house?
I listen to, some of these groups that are sound like, and the group I like best I've heard recently is Bright Eyes. They sing a lot of good stuff about contemporary issues, but their music's good, well produced, right. Young people.
And
I like hip hop. I got friends that do hip hop.
Really?
Yeah, some hip hop's good. It hits issues. Yeah, I like issues.
I don't know that I would have put you on the hip hop side of.
I've got former clients I've defended who have gone on to do hip hop music, and they sent it to me. It's not bad.
All right. John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute. And we can find Battlefield America, The War on America, The War on American People on where?
It's a bestseller on Amazon. You can get it off Amazon.
Yeah. Can we find it local? Can we find it in any of the stores locally?
I don't know. I know it's online, though it sells well.
We have to find it on Amazon. John, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, sir.
In this somewhat sweaty production studio. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it, and hopefully you'll come back again in the future. All right, everybody. See you next Sunday.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.